I am recording this year on a very special mountain in Israel, so therefore I apologize perhaps if the sound is a little bit distracted or a little bit affected. Last week's Parsha, Parshas Chukas, describes the fact that there were three mountains which were spared because the Anah HaKavod would flatten all the mountains to enable safer and more pleasant passage for the Jewish people. The three that were spared were Har Sinai, for obvious reasons, because Hashem's Shechina was designed to dwell there. But the other two were Hor HaHar, the ultimate site of Aaron's departure to Shemayim, and Har Nevo, Moshe's death area, where he passes, it's not clear Har Nevo, Har HaVarim, but certainly the mountains of Moshe Rabbeinu. What's fascinating about that Medrash is the latter two mountains don't have Kedusha per se, but they have great significance for Jewish history, because that's where two of our great leaders are buried. So it ultimately has not necessarily halachic kedusha, but it is rife with historical meaning. So I'm now sitting on Har Herzl. Today is the art side of it. My cousin, David Galaventis, Zichrono Levracha, who was a ktsin in Golani, who was killed last year in a military incident in Hebron. And just being there today and seeing, unfortunately, new graves that have been added over the past year, and being on a mountain in which so much blood of our children have been dedicated to protecting our country. And I realize that it's a mountain that may not have the halachic status of Har HaMoriah, but it certainly has the historical resonance of, let's say, a place such as Har HaHor or Har Nevo. It's interesting to think about Bilam, because there's certainly a historical element to all of his prophecies of the apocalypse of Messianic era. But there's also very clear moral lessons about someone who is a prophet but is morally degenerate, who is a prophet but is cynical and sarcastic and looking to highlight the negative in people, the Ayin Ra, who is a prophet and is very greedy, isn't content, and you sense that greed in his constant references to how much money he expects to make, and even if he were to be offered those contracts, those lucrative contracts, he couldn't sign. But what's also interesting is the moral imbalance of his prophecy. And obviously, the primary imbalance is how much he thinks he sees and knows, and he believes he perceives more than others, and he is Yodea Das Elyon, Shesum Ha'ayin, and all these references to his ability to see and understand, whether through prophetic opportunity or translating it into our own modern context through intellect and wisdom, to see beyond the capacity of others. And the story, the satire with the donkey, is an attempt to remind him of how little he sees. His donkey sees more than he does. And that maybe seeing is a faculty, but vision is an art, and Hashem can decide when to disclose and when to conceal. And that's the primary and probably best well-known transition or function of the satire, to lampoon Bilam through his donkey. But there's a second, more subtle drama to Bilam's moral imbalance. And the drama is best conveyed by a fascinating pasuk and a fascinating word. After the great reveal, and finally this angel approaches Bilam and explains to him why his donkey was hesitating, he says as follows. Vayomer elav malach Hashem, al mahi kisas asamcha zeh shalosh regalim. Why did you attack your donkey? Using the word shalosh regalim, which has important connotations for other reasons. Hinei anochi yatzil ha-satan. He explained to Bilam, I opposed your donkey, I barred or inhibited his advance. L'satan means to prevent, to thwart. Ki yarat haderech l'negdi. Yarat is a strange word, but it probably refers to the malach explaining why he intervened, or so to speak, why he was sent by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to intervene, because the journey of Bilam was disagreeable, wasn't approved, was obscene, was... The road was shaking because it wasn't a journey. Rashi says the actual earth was shaking, chared, or at least metaphorically, was an unstable and unsanctioned journey. The Gemara in Shabbos, and Rashi quotes the Gemara in Shabbos, very strange. The word Yarat also is a Rashi Tevos. Yud, Resh, Nun, or as it's called in Chazal, a Nutrikin. It's an acronym. And it refers to, probably, the sensation of the donkey. Yara, it was frightened. Ra'asa, it saw something. Natasa, it deviated or wandered from the path. Yara, ra'asa, natasa. Yud, Resh, Taf, Yarat. It's a strange textual anomaly. When else does the Torah speak in Rashi Tevos? I'll answer that question in a few moments. Why is this an opportunity for the experience to be conveyed as an acronym rather than through actual coherent and extensive speech? And even the phrase itself is very, very, as we would say, it's a dangling modifier, because the malach, so to speak, is voicing the response of the Aton. The malach is saying, this is why I have barred you. I came to be a satan. And then in mid-sentence, the malach is now explaining, so to speak, what the Aton felt. Ki arat haderech lenegdi. The Aton said, I saw and I veered because I was afraid. Very, very strange textual situation. Very strange medrash. I think the answer is as such. Bilam's ego and cockiness is expressed not just in his arrogance towards his own visions, intellect, ability to penetrate, to understand, to comprehend. That's part of it, and it's obvious, and he's laid blind satirically in a manner that his donkey is not. But a prophet is also a speaker. He's a bard. He's someone that blesses, someone that conveys deep ideas, religious blessings, curses, anathemas. He has the gift of speech, especially in periods in which people were illiterate. So speech was an empowering element. But speech sometimes can convey not just empowerment and confidence. People have a hard time speaking. Sometimes they stutter. Sometimes they're very introverted. It can lead as well as reflect insecurity. And giving people the ability to speak is essentially conveying and gifting them with confidence and empowering them. But it's a very thin line between speech as empowerment and speech as power, and wielding speech as power. And not just in negative or toxic ways to insult other people, but just to convey an air of superiority, of difference, as I said before, of bombast. And you get a very clear sense that Bilam has fallen into that trap. The communication in Parshas Balak is really off. There's very, very little healthy, humble communication, understanding the other party's perspective, his responses to these emissaries who are desperate and see it from their standpoint is very curt. It's very cut off from a literary standpoint. They have to make repeated efforts. Pasakei, Vayishlach Malachim El Bilam Ben Ba'or Pesara. They send agents. He doesn't respond to it. And it's almost as if not answering an email in our jargon. So they have to travel. There's a Gnei Moav and there's a Gnei Midyan. And they have to come and actually speak via Voel Belem by Dabroilov. So this agency, this message, this letter wasn't responded to. So it doesn't respect long-distance communication. Now people are actively communicating on a personal level. And he doesn't answer. He says, sleep here at night and I'll tell you what Hashem says. And there's no sense of simply identifying, commiserating, empathizing with what they're going through, all the while pointing out limitations. If any of us were to be in that situation as a compassionate person, say, I understand that I'm afraid also, but my hands are tied. There's not much I can do. I'll see. It's very bombastic, very insensitive, very sense of I'm empowered and I'm the person of speech and I can convey my ideas. And even speaking to you as an equal is something that I feel unable to. And Hashem in the dream relays that he can't. And when he wakes up in the morning, again, it's very, very supercilious. It's condescending. Go back to your land. And I'm not going to read the entire parsha because it's more shir in Tanakh and shir in the parsha. But for Bilam's speech, it's very self-confident, self-assured, and it's condescending, supercilious, and belittling to others because he's such a public speaker, and he's used to conveying authoritative, important ideas. And it's a very thin line, and sometimes we sense that people aren't able to, when they're placed into situations where their speech is associated with power. There's a lot of discussion in today's world of power, what gives us power, people looking for power. I think it's a very, very dangerous concept for religious-minded people who shouldn't be searching for power. But people in corporate worlds, people who are like myself in the rabbinic circles, where you speak with authority, sometimes that translates or transfers to your regular speech, in which it shouldn't. Your regular speech should be a speech amongst equals and kind and soft and humble. And with Bilam, you get the sense that he's someone who doesn't just arrogate vision, but he abuses speech. And part of the corrective of the satire with the donkey is that there's a speech and a message that he can't possibly understand, because acronyms and Rashi Tevos, as we'd say, and the Trikin, there's no way for you to divine it or decode it. It's all personal. You can concoct or construct endless Rashi Tevos and endless combinations. So the Malach and the Aton know about what happened, and they don't just know about what happened, but they are conveying to one another. So the Aton, at least the way the Malach relates it, the Aton, the donkey, relayed this to the Malach through Nutrikin, and the Malach relays it to Bilam, but so to speak, has to give him the cliff notes, has to give him the Google search for what Yud Resh Tet means. Just to create a parallel, just to help understand this better, I don't have a sefer in front of me, but the Gemara in Shabbos talks about another word in Parshas Vayechi, being Rosh HaTevis, where Yaakov refers to Reuven's intervention in the affairs between himself and Leah and Bilhah after Rachel's death, ki chilel yitzui alav. And the Gemara in Shabbos has a range of different interpretations as to how to interpret ki chilel yitzui alav. And again, it's a function of stunted communication. No one really knows. It's poor communication between Yaakov and Leah, between Yaakov and Bilhah, between Yaakov and Reuven, between Leah. Everyone has good intentions, perhaps, but the greatest tragedies in life are when those intentions aren't properly communicated. Even if they are communicated, they're communicated with a sense of haughtiness and power and superiority. So whenever the Torah employs Nutrikin, it seems as if it's a symbol for bad communication, and Bilam is a poor communicator. The irony, he's a great speaker, and he's got the authoritative final word. But that, ironically, has stripped him of his ability just to speak to people and understand, and has no clue what his donkey is thinking. It's not just that he doesn't see what his donkey sees in terms of his being abstained from vision, but he can't even talk to his donkey. Right away, he hits his donkey, and there's no communication. And you'd think that there'd be some, even if not verbal communication, because Bilam may not know that his donkey can speak, but at least there should be some soothing tones or... And right after this story with the Aton, you can quickly see how Bilam's communication improves. He sees the Malach, and the Malach chides him, and Vayomer Bilam el Malach Hashem Chatasi. There's humility, there's direct communication, ki lo yadati, ki ata nitzav likrasi baderech, v'ata imra b'enacha shuva li. And there's communication that you just don't have before. Vayomer Bilam el Balak. So he's been solved of this through this satire, through this almost clown act, through his donkey. And it's not just that he can see the Malach, but that the Malach communicates the donkey's impression in a language that you can't possibly understand unless you take the time to understand what's on people's hearts and what they really mean. It's almost a metaphor. Everyone speaks, and if we take the time to understand what they mean, then we really have healthy communication. If we don't, or we just translate it into our own narrative, then the communication is terrible, and it's hurtful to people, and it's insensitive to people. And this acronym is almost a metaphor for the donkey it means something. For Bilam it can't possibly mean anything because it's a separate code. I'm reminded of, let's say, those of you who have studied the Midrash Chinuch, the Shagris Aryeh, or other achronim that come up with very, very unique Rashi Tevos. And it takes us a while to decode what they mean. And they knew what they meant by the Rashi Tevos. And obviously we want to understand their Torah, so we make an effort. But the whole construct of Rashi Tevos means that the listener has to suspend their own baseline of ideas and try to get into the head, into the heart of the speaker.